Hi, my name's Sean Shaler. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek of YouTube and Twitter and Blue Sky and Facebook. And Chris, he's probably on the gram. I don't know. There's probably other social media I don't even know about. And he's famous on those two. OnlyFans. He's got an OnlyFans account where he just shows pictures of his action figures. That's it, though.
If only. Man, I made this great-looking Mr. Terrific statue that I recently worked on. Now I gotta go grab it.
That's only funny to me because I just watched Superman for our recording. That today, and I'm trying really hard because I interacted with you too much about all the Superman stuff.
I know. I was like, I was thinking about when has Sean watched it yet?
Right. So this one, I tried to like, no, Sean, you're just gonna shut up for another week.
Yeah.
And just hold it in right here. But I watched that today. Anyway, you've got a Mr. Terrific, and you're gonna disrobe him on OnlyFans. And oh, he looks great.
Yeah,
he looks fantastic.
I made this, so this is a statue, and I really thought about, all right, how do I get his spheres to levitating in the air. And then I used just a clear wrap something. This was a Captain America statue from Infinity War. So I was like, oh man, this looks great. I did the.
How did you do the jacket? If it was a Captain America, how did you do the jacket?
I had to make the jacket, which that was the biggest piece that I was like, I'm not sure I know how to do.
Yeah, for sure. How did you make that work? It looks amazing.
Well, for most of my pieces, I use this Warbler material ish type of deal where it's like if you superheat it, it'll become malleable. And so I had to do it in pieces. Like this part here is a piece, and then this part here is a piece, and then the back of it is a piece as well. And you can actually see like where the seams are at. So that's how I did the jacket. And then, this part of the jacket. Like, if you warm up this plastic thing, it will kind of, like I said, it turns mendable, and you kind of just mold it to how you want it to
shape
be.
You shaped these warm pieces around the action figure.
Yes.
I got you. Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it looks great. It looks like a proper leather jacket on an action figure.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So, I really like this piece. One of my things, I always go through these just feelings like during a custom. I go through like, oh yeah, this is gonna look cool. And then it's the point I'm like, this is not gonna look like I thought it was gonna look. It currently looks like crap. And then when I finish it, I'm like, this is better than I thought it would be. And so one thing, I posted this in the usual places I post customs, and they didn't get as much feedback on as I do other customs.
I mean, is it just because it's Mr. Terrific and not like a more prominent figure?
I don't think so. Like, most people who make custom action figures, they make niche kind of characters.
You're trying to get something you can't normally get looking cool.
Yeah. I also think there's a higher number of people who like to customize action figures than like to customize statues. Like, a lot of people just customize action figures. I do both.
Not a lot of people. Statues are more expensive?
Probably.
Higher risk involved?
I always find cheap statues, except for the Mr. Freeze one I did, was a pretty expensive statue. And I'm glad it came out as great as it did because I spent $50 on the statue. I never, to spend $50 on fodder is kind of crazy.
But yeah, that's great. There's risk involved for sure.
Yes. Yeah. The risk, like this, the Captain America one, I found at a toy store for $20. So like for a statue to cost $20, I'm like, oh yeah, that's not a big risk if it doesn't turn out how I like it. So but anyway, yes, really do. Oh yeah. To your point, that could be the point is that not a lot of people do statues because it's a little more expensive.
I believe that just as like the base material, that's going to be harder to pallet if you don't finish.
Yes.
Well, the final product looks great, and that's timely because not this week, not next week, but the week after that, and probably, if I know us to some degree, the week after that.
Absolutely. There's no way. Sorry, you're going to get it. You're about to set it up. Go ahead.
It'll take us two episodes. We're going to rank every Superman movie with our friend John, and it's going to take two episodes. We'll have to chop it in half, and we won't know when the halftime is. It's just going to come a certain point when I'm editing and be like, that's good, and that's going to be... That's going to be the marker. But
and then you know, I'm already planning. Oh, but I need to tell John this. Just to sneak in, rank the Supermans real quick, and then rank maybe the Lois Lanes, and then the villains. Okay. If we have time. We definitely will have time.
The whole shebang.
We definitely have time to rank the Supermans. That has to be done.
I have strong feelings on the Lex Luthors.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
In particular.
I am really excited to have this conversation.
Me too. Well, anytime we get to like we I don't know, which John been on like twice. It's always a good time. And he and you have very different perspectives. So that's good. I probably usually float a hair closer to you, but also I think it's because John probably internalized more of these things at a much younger age. Right, he probably took them in much closer to their time and their intended origin, whereas I probably skewed closer to you. But it's always good, always different perspectives. Yeah, looking forward to it. So not this week, not next week. Probably 1 and 2 weeks after that. We'll do ranking every Superman movie.
I've kind of always had different opinions about, like we used to debate the Tim Burton Batman movies versus the Dark Knight movies.
That tracks almost perfectly with what I won't say what little I know about, but what I know about John that tracks pretty nicely. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, and I have opinions that probably aren't surprising, but I don't think they're surprising opinions, but my opinions are stronger than I thought they would be. I thought I would have opinions, and they would be more apathetic. But I watched too many things that I was just like, okay, that's a surprising reaction. I'm feeling so much right in here that I didn't know I was going to feel in there.
So after I watched the last Superman movie I watched, whatever it was, I think it was the Donner Cut, I then went and watched Superman the Animated Series. And I've never really... Back when Superman Animated Series premiered, it used to bore me as a kid. It really did. Like, I remember the opening, and I'd be like, oh, time to turn to something else. Time to turn to the other channel on Saturday morning cartoons. Because, the thing is, I love Batman the Animated Series, but Superman the Animated Series bored me. And, I tried to watch a couple years ago, and I was like, it's so boring. But this time I watched it while I was working on that Mr. Terrific statue. And there still are some really boring episodes, but it's really good. It has its moments. Like, there's one moment that, like, made me tear up. I was like, oh, crap, dang. Like, Superman is, like... No, there's a moment where he couldn't... Like, Superman is... People say his weakness is kryptonite. And to me, his weakness is when he can't save someone. And, that's when he's the most down.
His weakness is that he cares a lot about people, right? He cares about humans is really the surprising weakness to Superman, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll get into it.
That Superman TV show as a kid, I just remember watching it and thinking, this feels old. Like, I felt like even in its time or roughly there, it just felt like an older cartoon to me. Whereas if I turn another channel, I'd get like the good TMNT, like the reruns because it's done, I think. But like the late 80s, early 90s TMNT or Batman or I was a Recess kid. I loved Recess. And Superman just felt old. It felt like a late 70s cartoon. It wasn't. It felt like that.
No, I get that sentiment. Yeah.
But looking forward to talking about that. Chris, great statue. What else you been up to this week?
Nothing much. Nothing much at all. Hiring some people at my job. And the first three interviews were honestly not that great. Last three were great, so that's good.
Good, good.
I was worried there for a minute.
You had a cold open there that was turning you off.
I was like, I might not hire anybody.
I can do this myself.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm up to.
Fantastic. So we are moving baby into the crib. Good. I mean, we're kind of in denial. Does it count as denial if you know you're in denial? Maybe. But yes. Just like we have liked having him in our bedroom because he's cute and he's a good sleeper. And sometimes you wake up in the morning just to like happy little baby coos. And that's funny to me. You just wake up and he's just over there like, ah, 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 ah. I'm like, oh, that's cute. So we didn't really want to move, but he's literally like, he's too big for the bassinet. Like if he puts his hands above his head, his feet and his hands are touching the bat. I was like, Heather, I think we actually have to do it now. So he's in his crib upstairs. So that's fun. And then I just watched most of the Nintendo Direct earlier today. And I won't bore people about it because there's way better sources than me. But it was a funny one where, to me, I thought it was kind of bad. And it's just one of those things that, like, puts you in your place is too negative. But it kind of reminds you of, like, your relationship with the product versus maybe the intended audience. Because I thought it was bad. And then a lot of people online really liked it, and I just thought that was surprising. But the most important takeaway for me is that Galaxy 1 and 2 are coming, and I know it's kind of expensive, and it's kind of an a-hole move that they put Galaxy on this stupid expensive 3D All-Stars thing, and now Galaxy 1 and 2 on its own full price thing. But, Chris, those are two of my favorite Mario games ever. Best soundtrack in video games, period, is Galaxy 1.
I'll have to buy them because I never played them before.
I think
it'll be like $60.
It'll be $60 on Switch 1, $70 on Switch 2. And I don't even know if that's remastered, Chris. They might be like re-resolutioned or something, right? Because the Wii was in 4x3 primarily. But it's like, that's my point. It's like, I see, to me, it's like, oh, ew, that's kind of, that should be like a $40, a $50 deal that they're just putting ROMs together on a cart. But Galaxy 1 is the greatest soundtrack in gaming. And it's coming from a guy who likes RPGs, right? The things like soundtracks, RPGs, you know, Nobuo Uematsu and whatever the guy from Dragon Quest, who I feel really bad, I should know his name. Nope, Galaxy. And then Dragon Quest 7 is getting a remake, but it's also, those are both on the Switch 1. And I don't think either one is going to, like, struggle. Like, it's not going to play Dragon Quest VII Remake on the Switch 1 and be like, man, this performance is tough. I should get a Switch 2. And that to me is, but anyway, if you're a Nintendo person, it was a big Direct that I didn't like, but apparently a lot of people did. And I've been playing a lot of Switch lately. I don't really know why I've been in the chair watching football, playing Switch, those things. Maybe just getting less busy. And because I like football, so I find excuses to sit down and...
Yeah. Probably don't have to hold the baby as much anymore. Baby can be on the ground, have ground time.
He loves ground time. He loves sitting in that. It's like a chair thing, but it kind of holds him tight. Like it's kind of a snug thing that kind of holds. He loves that. Today I made him wear a pair of shades, and he likes those. Pretty much likes everything. One of those things you stand him in, and it's got like butt. Like it's almost like you stand him in it, there's ones that are stationary. There's ones that are walks. It doesn't bounce. It just stands. But it's got like musical noises and buttons all over the place.
You have the stationary one?
Yeah, and he eats that up, man. He just slaps his hands until he hits a button, and then when he gets one that makes noise, he just like squeals, like happy squeals. It's the I could listen to him do that all day.
I was gonna say you should not. Had you said it's the one that rolls, I wouldn't have been overbearing. But those are like typically more dangerous. I would have told you how to be a parent.
We do have one that rolls, but he is substantially too small for it. Still, like his butt will slide off the side, like into one of the leg holes. So we do have one. I assume we'll use it at some point when he can't accidentally run his head into stuff or whatever, you know.
I think the most dangerous thing is stairs, of like, because if they fall down the stairs, like there's no
their head,
like there's
is
no natural
down.
Yeah, it's just like they're stuck in the thing.
Thankfully, it's literally downstairs. It's right over there, so it's like he wouldn't go too far. But I've got a nice hard floor space with like nothing he can hurt himself run into. So someday, I don't know, it's there. But cute baby stage where he. interacts, but he can't move, right? So you get all the good, like, fun chit-chatting and jabbering and all that stuff, but he still can't, like, run away and things like that. So that's kind of nice. And, yeah, that's been my weeks. Chris, we're going to do an episode, which is what we're doing right now. We're going to do a thing called What If Lu Tin Didn't Die, which in hindsight will feel like an ironic thing. But what if Lu Tin didn't die? And by that, we mean this flashpoint of the siege. The end of the siege is near, depending on... There's that one bit that you read that I maintain is not canon, but...
when it comes to canon, the show, anything happens in the show...
That's number one.
Takes
precedence?
Takes precedence. And then it's the comics or any
narrative treasure. Material, not adjacent then, material.
Then I go to creator thoughts. While it's like, yeah.
Okay, I gotta be honest. To me, creator thoughts, that's not even a little bit canon. That might be third in line, but the drop from a comic narrative like on paper to creator thoughts.
I agree with that. But I still, as long as it doesn't contradict what was said in the show. Like,
it's a source like that you referenced in your Wikipedia article.
When Korosami happened, like if you at the end of Legend of Korra, Korra and Asami walk off and hold hands into the spirit. Oh my gosh.
Spirit portal. World, spirit realm, spirit.
The spirit portal. Immediately, Brian Mike wrote, Korosami is canon. You can
it was mark it iconic. Down.
Yeah. And so, but like, if had he not said that, fans still would have been like,
they're just holding hands like, or whatever. You know what I mean?
And so, like, I do put some feeling, and then they supported it with the comic. And then it's like, it's funny, I had an argument with my little argument. My daughter tried to tell me one of my little
put ponies. Your daughter in her place.
we were talking about ships for some reason, and she was like, yeah, because we're talking about ships in JJK, and I was like, it's funny, because in JJK, in Jujutsu Kaisen, like, few of them are actually in ships, like, but in Avatar, like, there's so many ships, like, canon ships, and then somehow we got on My Little Pony. She was like, yeah, there was, she's like, these two characters were canon ship, and I was like, no, they weren't. And it's like, I'm not even a My Little Pony person. I've only seen whatever my daughter has seen tangentially. I just know for sure that these two characters weren't canon shit because they are two female characters. And this was the time that was not a thing. And I was like, do you know what canon means? And that might have sounded condescending a little bit on my part. And then she was like, well, there's like hints and stuff. I'm like, but hints is one thing, but like canon is like, no, like they, like, Toph and Sokka isn't canon. Like, there are hints that Toph might have a crush on Sokka. There's blushing scenes and stuff like that. But that's hints. Like, Aang and Katara are canon. That happened in the show officially anyway.
We see their children on screen. No, I mean, it's like a teaching moment for your kid.
Yeah, because I was like, My Little Pony came out around the same time that Legend of Korra came out. And Legend of Korra was groundbreaking in that representation. And I know for sure My Little Pony didn't do that. But then I looked it up later, and I was right, of course. I didn't go and tell her I was right, because it's like, whatever.
I would have. Listen here, you little...
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how I got off talking about...
Because I mentioned the adjacent material. So we're not ignoring the adjacent material, but what we're saying is that the flashpoint is that the siege is coming to an end, and then Lu Tin would have died, but he didn't. But he didn't die.
Yes.
And so the Fire Nation... So this is where that material differed. That material made it sound like it was... like a certain victory.
I'm not sure if it, I'm not sure if it was certain victory, but it was like, this is my chance.
And then, but wait, I think ultimately based on evidence in the show.
Yes.
In the show, so, when Iroh says, my men were tired, et cetera, and he couldn't go on, we are saying that, nope, the Fire Nation pulled back, but now Lu-Tin is not dead. And that is our flashpoint.
Yes. Yes. And before we start, I do want to shout out YouTube channel that is no longer around necessarily, or no longer making videos, that inspired me to make videos. And that's Avatar Critic, one of the, I want to say it was like, there was only like three YouTube channels who did Avatar stuff. There was like Hello Future Me, Avatar Critic, and Antoine Bandelay, and also Sage's Reign. Pretty much those were the only ones making stuff. And then I started making stuff, and I was maybe like the sixth or seventh person. And then other people came around, like Healthy Dose of Fran, stuff like that, to a much, much smaller extent. I'm including myself in that much smaller extent. those bigger ones. But Avatar Critic, he did a video of like, he did this same subject of what if Lu-Tin died? Or sorry, what if Lu-Tin didn't die? And that really inspired me of like, oh, there's do a bunch of what ifs in Avatar. So that was partially, because yeah, cause one of my first videos was like, what if the moon spirit, what if Zhao didn't kill this moon spirit? So anyway, if you want another opinion on what if Lu-Tin didn't die, go check that video out, because it's pretty good. I really don't remember what he said would happen. I have no idea what he said would happen. But I just remember thinking like, oh, he's right. That was really a linchpin in the series. And we'll see if that still holds true with our thoughts.
Agreed, agreed. So, Chris, the Fire Nation pulls out, and they go back home, and I mean, Iroh is disgraced, but his son maybe not so much, but also Iroh's still a general. He doesn't disappear for X length of time. He still is there, just, you know, does have a failed mission to some degree. And mm-hmm. And then what?
Yeah, so, you know, I would guess, you know, he returns back home after his 600-day siege failed, and at this point, the war is still going on. There's probably skirmishes and battles happening throughout the Earth Kingdom. Really interesting that they don't fight. Oh, that makes sense. But they don't have fights in the Fire Nation because the Fire Nation is invading the Earth Kingdom. That's like if that, Ukraine. Anyway,
that makes sense. Yeah,
yeah. And so battles will definitely still be going on. I'm sure there will be some, you know, Iroh goes back and he's still sitting at court and stuff. The thing is that what I think will probably push the story forward most in a logical manner is that Prince Ozai, at this point, the third in line for the throne, he still has ambitions for the throne. Like, and these adventures are known. Like, he says this to Zuko in the Day of Black Sun episode, where he's like, your mother knew I wanted the throne. So this is something that not only does he really want, but so much so that he's either shared the information with his wife, or she can tell just from his actions and stuff. So he definitely has ambitions for the throne. It's a matter of what he's going to do to try and get to the throne.
And so he then probably is trying to get number two out of the picture one way or the other. Chris, which I think we talked before, there's that scene where he maybe approaches the current Fire Lord, and it could be similar, right? It wouldn't be quite the same, but it could be similar where he approaches the Fire Lord and is like, hey, you need to make me the Fire Lord instead. Look at him. He failed this mission. That could still probably occur. It just wouldn't be as compelling.
Yeah.
And so then that in my mind is where Ozai starts playing. It's like, nope, I'm going to have to get him out of the picture the old fashioned way. Which
yeah.
is to make sure that he dies.
One thing we did discuss, cause this is the second recording before, not to take away the allure or the mystique of
peek
of
behind
this.
The curtain.
But we did discuss that Azulon, the current Fire Lord, does love Iroh. In fact, I feel like he probably loves Iroh more than Ozai. Like Iroh is a general. He's a vet. He is a decorated general at that. He's also Azulon's firstborn son. Like, he is not just willy-nilly giving over, passing up Iroh just because he lost a 600-day siege, while Ozai is honestly just sitting at home, probably, you know, training and stuff. But he's not battle-tested or
battle-worn stuff.
Yeah. Like, yeah, what? It, I mean, what is he? Probably 25 or so at that time? Maybe. Iroh is... I know they have... I believe they have a considerable age difference of like at least 15 years or so. I would gather he's probably 20. Well, no, at this point, maybe he's like 35. I'll give him 35 or 40. And Iroh's probably like 55, somewhere around there. Yeah.
That feels reasonable.
I don't know where I was going with that, but...
Just that Iroh, like, he was young, he would have had good throne time ahead of him. He was a logical choice because he was battle-tested.
Yes. Yes. So then Ozai has to conspire. He has to get rid of Iroh. Like, that's the first course of action. One thing, Iroh is probably stronger than him. And even in the book, which doesn't, this part doesn't, I don't think, contradicts much. Iroh in the book, what was it? Legacy of the Fire Nation. That's what it's called. Iroh does say, like, they would have battles and stuff, like fights. Actually, wait, let me read that, because I don't want to be making it up. But I believe Iroh always, like, beat him and stuff. He said, Oh, it says, as we grew competitive, as brothers do, but his ambition... We would fight like warriors over... Oh, they would fight like warriors over against Paisho. Okay, never mind. They wouldn't. Where he would grow frustrated in fits of rage, flip the board, split in pieces. So never mind. They didn't do physical fights. Boo. But nonetheless, Ozai, I'm sure he can gather...
that as competitive siblings, like, that they threw a punch at each other before.
Yeah. You know your sibling's strength.
Yeah, 100%.
To a certain extent. And also, again, he is a decorated dragon of the West. It takes a lot to get the title dragon. Apparently, you got to slay a dragon. And that is quite the feat for him. I wonder if there's other dragons, you know? There's like someone's like Dragon of the North. Also, why did he get the name Dragon of the West? Did he kill a dragon in the West?
I say, isn't the Fire Nation on the East half?
Map? Yeah. No, they're on the west part. My bad, I'm tripping. They're on the west.
Okay. So yeah, just just western. Okay. All right. The cardinal direction doesn't do much for me. He could have just been the dragon, and I'm like, oh, that's sick.
The dragon of the west. Yeah, just Iroh, the dragon of the west, and no one questions it because it's just a cool sounding name. Yeah. Like, you got to be the dragon of something.
The dragon
and
of
it's what? Like.
Can't be the Dragon of the Fire Nation. That's too strong. That's too strong.
Yeah, anyway, he's a dragon. So Ozai has to conspire to take him out. Now, this is where Sean and I differ on where to go from here. We had a big debate, but
By the end, you got me won over. We settled on like a Mulan thing. The manner of which it kind of occurred, we had some differences maybe, but I think we settled on a Mulan take.
Okay. To preface this, I would say, like, all right, so they're at the Fire Nation. They're doing general council war meetings and stuff. And I think at this point is where Ozai really starts to do his conspiring thing. Like, he might be like, oh, I hear that this area over here, like, if we win this battle here, it'll be a very decisive battle. He's like, but, you know, we need a really strong general for that battle. And so he's like, and he he suggests Iroh be the one. Right, it's like, brother, this is the time for you to reclaim your honor and stuff, whatever, you know, putting in those poetic waxings. While maybe Iroh is considering stepping back a little bit, who knows? You know, war is getting tiring and stuff. I'm just trying to build
Narratively well this scenario where Iroh comes back, he's like, I just don't have it in me anymore. And they're like, well, listen, you know, we have, and they, by they, I mean that Ozai has constructed in the background. He's manipulated his way to like, hey, nope, this is, we got to have you do this one more thing. We think this is going to turn the tides, and we need your leadership. Again, kind of manipulative. We need your leadership on this. We think you're the right guy.
That would be really interesting way of like, it would be an interesting parallel to Azula and Zuko, how Azula tries to manipulate Zuko all the time and stuff. Like Azula also talks about like, oh, this is your way to regain your honor. And this would be Ozai being like, this is, could be a way to regain your honor. But he'll be like, listen, you don't have to do it and stuff, but you know,
well, and Ozai,
you are a strong general. And
I mean, Iroh probably isn't, he's probably not turning tail on the bad guy life as quickly yet either, right? Because
yes.
Son didn't die.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He doesn't have the same motivation to say no. But so, yeah, if he's like, hey, man, you got to do it for the Fire Nation. We're almost there. We're going to turn the tide. We're going to end this bloody thing, right? And all we just need you for this bit. And then, boom, you're on the throne, right? But
In my head, narratively speaking, for what's going to happen next, I wanted to put, and I know we don't necessarily do this on a narrative point, we just do it more logically.
I mean, you got to tell a good story.
To have Iroh wrestle with that, to make a full decision that he was wrestling with, like, yes or no, should I go to this thing? Okay, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it for one thing to end this war. And also, hey, I might, you know, regain my honor from my last battle, right? So, like, it's a slightly more selfish thought, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So
you could mask it with, like, some good intentions of like, man, if we just get this over with, that's fewer lives, fewer sieges, fewer nonsense that we had to do. Yeah. I get it.
As Mike and Brian like to say, which I disagree with, because I think they've talked about Iroh before, of how like, like, yeah, Iroh wasn't like a good man, and part of him wanted, and I call BS on this. I don't often call BS on Mike and Brian.
But Chris, it's not canon. I call BS on him right now.
But they said, like, Iroh, part of Iroh getting into war is, like you're saying, it's like he can possibly end it quickly and with fewer lives, right?
I don't.
But to me, that's not a good reason to do war. Right? It's like, oh, the best, I'm going to do war so I can get war done quickly. Like, no, that's because they're kind of explaining like where Iroh was coming from on being in by invading nations and stuff. And me, I'm like, no, also said like he saw a vision that he would take on Ba Sing Se. To me, that is already enough, and you wouldn't add in the notion of him trying to end and spare lives through some.
He was just drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, and that's, you know, he was in a country that's like, hey, we're going to spread our gifts to the rest of the world. Yeah. And he's like, I know there's going to be some conflict. I'm not saying he's a good person. We've established that we like his arc. Because, hey, drinking the Kool-Aid turns out it's not always a good thing. But that's how I've always chalked it up. It's like, he was just
I've never thought that Iroh was evil. Like, yes, I'm about to kill these people here in this earthbender here.
Kill everybody who don't agree.
Of course he's drinking the Kool-Aid. Like that, in Fire Nation Indoctrination, that is the story of Iroh and Zuko and how they step through that, right? If you are, like, so far over that you are, like, fully, like, a villain of I kill just as I kill, that's not indoctrination. You're just an evil person. Like, you went, indoctrination can only go so far, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Iroh is,
He's on this tour. In battle. One more Earth Nation tour.
Yes. And Lieutenant comes with him, because Lieutenant loves Iroh. Like, that is, without a doubt, he says it in that letter, in that picture of Lieutenant that Iroh uses in Days of Ba Sing Se, Tales of Ba Sing Se. That letter reads, like, till we win the war, your beloved son, Lieutenant loves Iroh. And so he will follow him into battle.
Maybe he's just part of his regiment, too. It's like, oh, yeah, we kind of a package deal.
Yeah. And so I believe our thoughts were, like, what if Iroh gets injured slightly? So Ozai, the whole point of Ozai singing this battle is that he's sending an assassin to kill Iroh. And then that assassin, right, because you need someone, you need a great assassin, right? So that assassin would be possibly either the Combustion Man or another Combustion Bender.
I don't know that it has to be, as much as I love tie-ins as much as anybody, I don't think it has to be Combustion Man in particular.
I don't think so either.
But we talked a lot about, and Chris, I'm so hooked on this idea of that you don't really see it, that you hear this pop, pop, and then you, like, that's the teaser that you hang on to for three.
Wait, I forgot we talked about that last time.
I can't unthink it. Pop, pop. God, I love the episode where it's like season 5 or 6, because one of the less good seasons, and there's fewer good episodes, but they're trying to get the rich, dumb kid to come to their school. And he's like, I want that to be my thing. And then later they go check on Magnitude, and he's just, like, written a lot of, like, bad punch phrases on the whiteboard. And he's just, like, testing them out. He's so depressed. Anyway, sorry. But you get that teaser. So we know it's Combustion Bender now. But you just hear this pop, pop. And ultimately what happens, Chris, I prefer the angle of Lutin taking... Something happens to Iroh, something small. He takes an arrow or takes a rock, and he's in the medical tent. And outside, Lieutenant's like, they need a voice.
Iroh takes a minor something.
It's not life-threatening, just debilitating. And Lieutenant's like, it's my time. And he grabs Iroh's helmet.
Yeah.
He runs out. He takes charge. Combustion Bender from a distance that we just hear. We don't see. Just hear the pop, pop.
Yeah.
And then Lieutenant dies again. I know we said what if he didn't, but what we meant is what if he didn't for a little bit. And I like the idea that it was just Lieutenant being ambitious, like A, to make his dad proud, you know, dad and country. And B, I like that Iroh didn't tell him to. I like that he just did. I like the idea that Lieutenant was like a victim of his own, ambitions.
Ambition. That would be nice. It's funny. So, I can go with that. The other way you can go with that, and I don't think we talked about. Oh my gosh, my back is itching. I have a back scratcher down here somewhere, but or I have to use.
What your tallest action figure?
The new Demon Slayer movie comes out tomorrow, and oh gosh, that does not work. Anyway, the other route to go there would be, I'll still go on the lines of one thing again to set it up is that Iroh as a general probably wears like a different helmet, right? And that part can keep, but a helmet that clearly identifies that's the general. We know General Iroh, because Ozai would tell the assassin, kill the general. He'll be identified by this. So completely cool going with the route of like Iroh gets slightly injured or whatever in a medical tent. Like he could probably go on. And then this, the other route of from what you said would be that Lieutenant, because he's probably up for promotions or up to prove himself, is like, hey, like, I can take over for you, Dad. Like, I can do this. Like, this is what you trained me to do. Like, I want to be like you, and I can do this. And then Iroh would give him his blessing to do that, and then he would get killed. Either way, he gets killed. I am fine with doing it your way of Lu Tien's ambition and strive to be like his father still does that. The part that the reason why I like the other route as well is that it just creates more anguish for Iroh of like, not only did I like put, not only did I encourage my son in this war, but I was the one that that put him in position. I was the one that gave him the keys, that put that helmet on him, that put that crown on him. And that's what killed them. Like, they were trying to kill me. And in a sense, I inadvertently killed my son.
I think you can still either, feel a lot of that.
You can. You definitely can. That's why I said I'm fine with either way.
We get to
it really doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, we approach a similar end result of, like, it's a kid who had great intentions relative to his circumstance.
Yeah.
And a dad that's left feeling 100% guilty regardless of.
Yeah. I could see. Oh, and again, we talked about Mulan. Just to tell you about Mulan because, you know, gosh, I keep forgetting his name. Chang? Let's get down to business. No, they don't say his name.
Ben Chang? Is that going another comedian reference?
Gosh. Ben Chang. Now I got to look it up. Oh, gosh. I'm so mad that I can't. Because now that I think about it, I don't know a lot of the characters in Mulan. But I've seen that movie so many times. Do I not have internet? Oh, yeah. I turned off the liner. It's been slow lately. Oh, is my Wi-Fi even on now? Not that I would change. It is on. Mulan. Fa Mulan. Can't be Yao. No. Li Shang. That's the name. So I was right. Or did I say Chang?
You said, well, I heard Chang, but it could have just been because I was thinking about Community. You know, hear what you want to hear.
I said Chang, but it's close to Shang, and that's what I meant. Li Shang. His dad's name apparently is Li Shang also. Oh, his dad was, wait a minute. Wait. No. B.D. Wong played Li Shang. Okay, that makes more sense. He does sound a lot like B.D. Wong now in my head. B.D. Wong is in a lot of stuff. He was someone that I hoped would play Long Fei in the live action one. Anyway, in Mulan, Li Shang is very much about like proving himself and stuff and taking over for his father and trying to and then he does take that part when his father dies. But in this case, Li Shang, aka Lu Tien in this case, dies. So Iroh has to deal with that guilt and stuff. And then I want to say, so we had a lot of conversations about leading up to this point. But then after this point, after Lu Tien gets killed in this battle, which is, you know, probably takes place 6 months, a year after Siege on Ba Sing Se, somewhere around there. Iroh probably still goes down the same spiritual path he went down. I don't see much changing there. Just instead of him having a altar in Ba Sing Se, you have an altar in whatever random Earth Kingdom territory he's at. Maybe Omashu. Yeah, I can see it being Omashu. Yeah, and then you can like a combustion bender could easily get up on a vantage point because it's so healy and stuff. But
yeah, it's fair. Yeah. Earth Kingdom's like peak spot for combustion benders to work. Well, we got big plateaus overlooking large valleys. Sure, yeah, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. That's what happened when he first met the gang. I want to say he like they were in a valley. Yeah, he was higher up. Yeah. So yeah, after that, things probably go close to how they go. So Lu Tien's dead. Iroh goes down a spiritual path of redemption and empathy and understanding. Ozai still kills Zulan with the help of Ursa. Zuko, we had discussed that Iroh probably still returns in time for Zuko to invite Zuko into a war room where he speaks out.
I think
not much changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, what a, you know what? I can't even say it because it's going to spoil something I want to talk about next episode. I want to say a thing. No, I can't. Can't do it. Never mind. Okay. All right. Well, I'll say it next episode. But hey, that's fine. Chris, we've been talking for 45 minutes somehow. It doesn't feel like that, but we already have actually anyway. So listen, the moral of the story is, what if Lutin didn't die? Is that, well, everybody dies someday, and Lutin's pretty much cooked one way or the other.
It's a, I meant to say, last time I said, it's Lutin dying is a canon event. In the Spider-Verse movies, they talk about like certain like lieutenants or certain a captain in every universe for some reason has to die. And in the second Spider-Verse movie, they say that. And then Miles' dad is about to become captain, and they're like, you gotta let him die. And he's like, no, F that. I'll fight you all. Like, I'm not gonna let my dad die. Which is a crazy, honestly, Spider-Man thing to say for other Spider-Man. For all the Spider-Man in the... Have you seen the second Spider-Verse movie?
Yeah, so love the first one. I've probably seen the first one three or four times, like more than a couple, but less than a 10. Second one I've only seen once, and I liked it, it probably went a little harder into kind of nebulous multiverse type thought processes than I would have wanted it to, but it's still good. Yeah. I still enjoyed it.
Well, then to me, it's like, well, you don't know for sure. Like, there are so many universes that every one of them, a captain has to die.
Yeah, that's a weird... Why would that be a case? Why would it...
And then even if that's the case, you don't accept it. Like, Spider-Man and most of these universes, like Spider-Man's story is about often dealing with guilt and dealing with burden and dealing with responsibilities and stuff. But it's also like, I will try to save everyone. Like that is, I have to try. And like for all the Spider-Man and all the universes be like, no, we got to stop this kid from trying to save his dad. It's kind of a betrayal of Spider-Man.
It is. It created a nice plot point, but overall not for me. Chris, good chat. I want to say this, and I keep thinking like, oh, there's a good parallel here, but then as soon as I say it, it's gonna spoil something important. Come back next week, because we're gonna talk about, in line with this whole Iroh, if we accept, which I think we do in this podcast, that Iroh and Zuko have maybe two of the greatest redemption arcs ever in movie or film. Next week, we're going to talk about our other favorite redemption arcs in movie and or film. And I'm pretty excited to do that. But this part has been, what if Lutin didn't die? The answer is, he still does die, and we appreciate you listening to us explain why. My name's Sean. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek of all the social media. You can find him on OnlyFans at I Unpaint Figures. That's his name. I unpaint them. Because how else would you undress them? I don't know how you undress an action figure. That's ridiculous. I'm going to feel really bad if there's somebody out there with like acetone who actually just does unpaint figures on OnlyFans. Just stripping it right off. Pun intended. Pun intended. Anyway, thanks for listening or watching. I'll put all the stuff down in the description. And any likes, comments, bells, subscriptions, positive reviews, thumbs ups you can give us, we appreciate it all. And if not, that's okay too. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.